Welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Matt Enders, Tony Bemis, and Mary Tomich.
All right, so this is episode 34 for June 3rd.
Yes, it's the 20th anniversary of SUSE Linux, and it coincides with the transit of Venus.
Yeah, speaking of the transit of Venus, that's a really cool thing. I was on a bunch of websites this week trying to find something I could use to watch it without going blind. Okay, but
from but a also, website. What were you gonna download?
No, like instructions on how to build something.
Oh, okay.
They say that you can use like number 14 welders goggles, but they've got to be real number 14 made out of glass, not the ones out of polycarbonate, because the polycarbonate ones let too much light through. Blah blah blah. Blah.
Oh, really?
So I'm probably not gonna actually get to see it. I'll probably have to watch a video of it. But anyway, also this is the last time it's gonna happen in our lifetime.
So you mean those eye doctor big plastic glasses that you wear when you come out after your pupils have been dilated won't work?
Not enough, no.
Yeah, not enough. You can take a mirror and shine it up against a big wall and it'll do the same thing.
Yeah, that was one of the things I saw was to shine a mirror on a white, like point a mirror at it and then have the reflection of the mirror shining at the wall, at a white wall, and it's too complicated.
I did that for the solar eclipse one time. And it worked really good. I just shined it on my garage wall. And
I just watch them.
Yeah.
But I think it's not quite the same as watching it directly. I mean, obviously safely with some very, dark glass or whatever.
Yeah, like the one website said it had to be that number 14 welders use, the number 14 green. Mm-hmm. But it has to be, they said it had to be the glass, not the polycarbonate.
Just think, on that day, what is it, the 5th? Just think, welding in America is going to stop while all those welders look at the transit of Venus if they're working.
Well, that's what they said, though, that most welders don't use the number 14 glass anymore because they don't need it. And they use this polycarbonate that says it's 14, but not, and it lets a lot more ambient light through. Like the picture they had where they showed a picture of,
of a welder?
No. Like trees and stuff with the sun behind it. Mm-hmm. And they showed it with the number 14 glass, and all you could see was the sun. And then they showed it with the polycarbonate number 14, and you could see all the trees and the road. Yeah.
Wow.
So,
you know, what I'm wondering is whether it's like that a lightning dark glass where if you're out in the sun, it darkens or something. No. Maybe it's okay. Never mind. All right. I think we've talked
transition
about
ones.
Long.
Yes. Moving on.
Okay. June 5th.
Yeah. All right. June 5th. Transit of Venus.
All right, Tony. So what did you do this week?
So this week I continued working on my Gen 2 VM and I got a working system going. I got,
woo-hoo!
It took me an entire week, but it was because there's a lot of missteps.
An entire week to install a distro.
Oh my God.
And not including the weekend.
It's like Mary said last week, Gen 2, the distribution for guys with too much time on their hands.
Nothing else to do, yeah.
there's a lot of missteps that I did. So I thought, well, why don't I try it again and kind of just distill down to what I really need and know the steps to do it in order, and then I get everything installed right. So I pulled one of my D830s out and started the install, and I actually did it from Ubuntu 10.4 live CD and just did the CH root from there, and it worked fine, except for I had a problem with Grub. Once I installed Grub, I had the flash drive plugged in. And
you forgot?
And then Grub, I had to have the flash drive plugged in to be able to boot Gen 2.
Oh.
So once I booted Gen 2, then I had to run Grub again to pull the flash drive out and put, yeah. But I got it working.
How many times? My key question.
It took me almost.
How many times did you have to compile the kernel?
Just once.
Oh, jeez.
The first time, yeah, it actually worked pretty good. Although, you know, I have to say I'm trying to get my cred level up here, but I have to give a little props. Gen 2 has this handbook that gives you step by step what to type in, and it works. So, I learned a lot in the meantime.
Well,
a lot of things I didn't know.
All right,
but,
good for you.
Yeah.
I learned how to copy commands from the internet.
No. Because it's more than just a list of commands. They explain why each command.
Yeah, no. That I'm impressed.
And Tony, I'm not being condescending.
No. No, that's great, Tony. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So what will you do with it now? Are you going to run it, or are you just going
to? I think I'm going to try to tweak it as much as I can and mess around with it, just to say I got it working and got it perfectly as I wanted. But it took me one full day. So I started at like noon. No. It took me about 2 days. I started at 8 o'clock in the morning on one day, and then it compiled for almost 28 hours or something. A lot of compiling time. And then it was about, noon the next day, I had it done.
You know, if you were in Boy Scouts, you know, you'd probably get a little badge or something that just says,
I think I'm going to make up a Gen 2 merit badge.
For over 24 hours straight.
I know. Yeah, I compiled Gen 2 and all I got was this.
This is stinking bad.
But
the
emerge
alone took almost 10 hours. Of Gnome, but that includes all the Gnome stuff, all of X, and
well, that's
pretty
great,
cool.
Though that's cool. Certainly got further with compiling a kernel than I did. Now, of course, now I feel the challenge.
I think you did fine with compiling a kernel. It was there. You probably just had the wrong boot options.
I think you had it set wrong in Grub, actually.
No, Lilo. He's Lilo.
Oh, well.
But still, Lilo has boot options.
That was one of the problems, and I did go into Lilo Conf and fix that, so it was pointing to the, and it was correctly named and all of that. And I did get further, but it's still.
But there's still boot options at the end, not just what kernel to point to. There's still boot options you have to, because I had to tweak a couple times on this laptop which one to use.
Okay, I'll have to check. That's all I'll say.
And also, if it's all in one partition, remove the initrd RAM, or initRAM FS.
RAM FS.
Yeah, remove that, because that caused a problem also. Yeah, I tried to use it this time, and it still gave me a problem.
I think I set up a separate partition for home, so...
That's fine.
It's just the stuff that needs to boot. Like, as long as Etsy and user and bin and sbin are all in the root partition.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And temp. Then you should be good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I might just dust that thing off and try it again.
All right.
So, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Thanks. Nat?
Yeah, well, I had a customer that I took some laptops back to him that I did a reinstall, and they had Vista on them, so I reinstalled Vista. Customer says, oh, we wanted XP. Okay. So I brought them back, and I told him I'd do XP for no charge. And I brought them back. And it took me an entire day practically to figure out how to get
entire XP. Day at no charge.
To figure out how to get XP to boot on these freaking laptops.
Oh man!
Because Vista booted fine and would install. Windows 7 I tried booted fine and would install. XP, as soon as it got to the part where it said starting Windows, it would BSUD.
Mm.
And it took me almost a whole day to figure it out. It was a switch in the BIOS. I had to tell the hard drive to stop identifying itself or stop using like something like HATCI or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. And to say it was an IDE drive, even though it was a SATA drive. And as soon as I did that, XP installed right away.
Well, so you had your whole day episode.
It was horrible.
Wow,
Windows, I hate them, but it pays me, so.
you gotta eat, I guess. So, and as for myself, one of my big projects this week was an attempt to root my HTC Android phone. So I had been emailing with the guys from Droid Nation, which is a great little podcast, and really a good group of guys, Jonathan and Steven and Sean and the rest of them. Anyway, so we were on it Wednesday night, and we were going to get started, and we discover that the bootloader my HTC uses is a newer version. And so it's, I think, 1.5, and the very commonly available instructions and methods for rooting it are for bootloaders 1.3 and 1.4. The 1.5, the instructions are still, they're still somewhat preliminary, and none of us really felt comfortable walking me through it. I think if we'd all been in the same room and had done it, then we would have done it. But because we were you know, speaking via Mumble and all of that, we just decided not to do it.
And not to brick your phone.
Not to, yeah. No, and that's fine. If I end up bricking it, I'll just get another one. But yeah, we just decided not to. And I feel comfortable. I mean, if we brick it because we're using a method that's well known and common, that's one thing. But I think we're going to do it at some point. But we just decided not to. But I had a good time anyway. It was really fun listening to those guys. They gave me a little bit of a hard time for running KDE, because Stephen had to. We had to make sure that my Mumble configuration was correct. So we used that Chrome Remote Desktop. And it was the first time I'd used it. You know, again, it's an add-in for the Chrome browser. And I think it was the second time he had used it. And he told me he had been pretty impressed with it. And I tell you, it was really something to see. And as I think we said before we started recording, that browser must use some of the Chrome OS code in it, because he just took it over.
That's really cool.
That is very cool. I have that extension installed on my Chrome, but I've never used it.
Mm-hmm. And so, does that work cross-platform? Like I can remote into Windows?
It's supposed to, yes.
That's cool.
That's why I installed it, so that I could use it as an RDP mm-hmm. kind of yeah, client
so,
to Windows.
So that was what I did.
But speaking of Chrome OS, though, I may have mentioned on a previous show that I was having a real problem with Chrome playing videos back on the Internet, and I was having to use Firefox because Chrome, for some reason, was playing everything fast-forward. And I couldn't figure out why. I couldn't get it to fix it. Well, I was complaining about it to my son this week, and he says, well, what are you running? I said, well, I'm running Chrome Unstable. And he goes, well, wait a minute, stop. You're running something called Unstable, and you're bitching about it not working right. And I said, well, yeah. And he goes, you're just an idiot. And he walked away. So I said, well, wait a minute, maybe he's got a point there. So I installed Chrome Stable instead of Unstable. And it all works good now.
All right. There's a little lesson to be learned there, Matt.
I'd like to say we've said the same thing, but Matt just doesn't listen to us.
So
no matter what he says to his son, he still listens to his son.
Yeah. All I know is it works now. I'm in good shape.
All right.
Cool.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
We had a really light week this week with the kernel, okay? We had a release candidate released on Saturday, June 2nd at 18:29 Pacific Daylight Time. Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.5-RC1. However, he made no release announcement that I can find. The only thing I could find about it was someone else on the mailing list saying, there's a new kernel RC out there, but no release announcement. What's up? So that's all I have. I don't have Linus's little usual quip about the release. So mainline's now 3.5-RC1. There were no stable updates this week as Greg Crow Hartman's jaunt around Southeast Asia continues. And our kernel developer quote of the week comes from Linus himself. And it's from Linus because he really thinks that Genome 3 sucks. Who do I need to get standard font size and panel options instead of having to wade through this kind of unsupported and random extensions that look ugly as hell and break randomly crap? Maybe if I told people I was going blind and claimed that the font size was an accessibility feature, people would care. Never mind that I want to make the font smaller. That was a direct quote from Mr. Torvalds.
Rather direct, too.
He's very unhappy with GNOME 3, shall we say.
I can tell that, yeah.
Well, has he ever said what he's running now instead of GNOME 3, which obviously isn't running?
I don't know.
It sounds like he's trying to run it.
I heard at the beginning when GNOME 3 first came out, he went to XFCE, I thought.
I don't know. I think I heard that too, that he was giving that a try. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, he's doing something with GNOME 3 right now and just can't make it work.
All right.
All I have to say to Mr. Torvalds is, cinnamon is a beautiful thing.
It is. But can you get cinnamon running on SUSE? Because that's his distro choice right now, isn't it?
I think you can.
All right.
Don't look at me.
Cool.
I am not going to run that experiment this week.
All right.
So that's it for the kernel. Like I said, really like. So.
Yeah, it is kind of light, but that's all right.
Yeah, cool. Oh,
the quote.
Yeah, it really stands
out. It was an eye opener.
Yes, don't, it was. An ear opener.
Plug your small children's ears before listening to the Colonel quote. Although, now that I'm giving the warning after the quote,
I was going to say, that's not going to work out so well. That should be put in before.
If we beep it, you can go back and look at the show notes. It'll all be there.
Yeah, Tony, beep that.
All right.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
We have, back on the 27th, we have Bridge Linux 2012.5. They're a desktop-oriented distribution based on Arch Linux.
Yeah, that kind of, that little logo, it's like a shuriken, you know.
A shuriken?
Shuriken.
A throwing star?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A shuriken shuriken.
Oh, they say, they both say they're the first distro that will support UEIF out of the box. So that's interesting.
Yeah. All right, and we're moving along.
Moving along to, I can't even see this one.
There's a website it, that allows you to pronounce, or that will tell you how all the words in the world are pronounced.
Ooh.
And actually, this is it's Caixa Mágica.
All right, there. It's a Portugal Linux distribution.
Yep.
For desktops and
Portuguese. Portuguese.
Yeah.
You know, something interesting about that was when they first came out, they were initially based off of SUSE, and then I think in 2007, during, you know, the Mandrake to Mandriva, kind of the heyday of Mandriva,
mm-hmm.
They switched and were based off Mandriva, and then I believe in 2011 they switched to Ubuntu as their base from which that distro is derived.
What's with these distros hopping bases?
I don't know, ask Matt.
It's interesting. Distro hopper. The hopper.
Oh, poor Matt.
We should call you the hopper.
Hopper.
The hopper.
Although, I got to really say, this freaking Mint Debian is really starting to irritate me again with their lack of updates. I'm really getting a little irritated.
Are you running the stable?
Yes. I'm running the Mint Debian, and it's just really, there hasn't been an update for over a week now. Come on, something's got to be updated. This is not right.
Chakra Linux.
You know, I think you should try Fedora, because, you know, Fedora 17 was just released.
Mm-hmm.
That was on the 29th.
No, and I read two tutorials this week about how to get Cinnamon running on Fedora.
Yeah,
but no.
They don't have the distro or the what you call it, you said you guys didn't like the.
Talk about the Beefy Miracle.
No. Oh. The Beefy Miracle is the new release name. No, but whatever hell. What's it called? What'd you guys call it? Dependency hell.
RPM hell.
RPM hell. Well, that doesn't,
well, that's
that doesn't happen
all
anymore.
That. I know.
Yeah.
Yum solved all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of our listeners
somebody had
commented
some
on
feedback
that.
On that this week,
yeah.
Too, so. I'm sure we'll get that in the listener feedback.
It will be. All right, continuing on the 29th, we have GRML 2012.5.
Fedora on purpose?
No, we just talked about it, didn't we?
I just said it. Didn't you hear me say?
Oh, I thought that was like an aside. I didn't realize that was the actual. I thought that was like an aside. I didn't realize that was the actual.
Yes, Fedora 17 was released. EP Miracle.
Never mind. Just move on.
All right.
Yeah, that GRML. Hey, I've used that. You know.
Have you?
No, I really have.
Have you?
Yeah.
All right.
Didn't like it, though.
What didn't you like about it?
I just didn't like the way it worked. I really like Trinity Rescue Kit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
One of those Debian Live CDs for administrators and test. It says
for
users of
recovery and things like that.
My question is, what is users of text tools? Or is it supposed to be test tools?
Where is that? Is that in there?
It's in, on there.
Users
of text tools.
Probably.
No, I'm thinking they're talking about the CLI, the command line environment.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what GRML only boots into a command line environment.
Okay.
Oh, there you go. Ooh.
But so does Trinity Rescue Kit, TRK,
mm-hmm.
But they have this nifty menu. It's just TRK.
Is it like
write it down.
Does it look like a Midnight Commander kind of thing?
No,
where...
but they do have Midnight Commander available if you want to use the file manager.
It's just command line. It boots straight to command line. There's
like
no GUI.
Right, there's no GUI, but there is a menu.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pick to do things just right from the menu.
Oh, okay.
So
very nice.
Yeah, I really like TRK.
Sweet.
Those guys do a nice job.
Going on, there's another Debian-based live DVD release, which is Nopix 7.0.1.
happens.
They're like, they're the original live DVD.
They are.
Or and, CD yeah, and DVD.
Very nice.
I remember buying a book, like switching to Linux, and that was 2004, 2005, and had the NOPIC CD in with it and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Anyway, continuing on, we have another live CD, Clonezilla Live 1.2.12-60. And we've talked about Clonezilla in the past, that yeah, it's I've a Debian-based live CD also. Really well. It's for disk cloning.
I'm gonna learn how to use it.
It works great. Like
Awesome. I started using that a couple weeks ago.
What I've used it for is when I need to switch out a hard drive in a computer, I'll clone the initial hard drive to an image, put the new hard drive in, then drop the image back on it, re-expand it, bam, oh, done.
Yeah. Yeah, because say somebody's running out of free space and you don't want to just add another hard drive, you can clone their 20-gig drive onto a 500-gig drive and then just expand the hard drive or the partition size to the full disk, and all of a sudden they have...
Yeah, I should look into this.
Yeah, it's cool.
Just on general principle.
Yeah, it works really well. Hey, and
You know what you should do, Mary? You would probably like this the best with all your distro testing and stuff, mm-hmm. that you can make an image of your current laptop and then install the other distro, do your test, and then take that image that you had created and put it right back onto the laptop. You could do back and forth. What's wrong with that?
Well, you could do it.
Yeah, Matt Grimace.
It saves you can do it, but it's not how I would do it. I would do it the way Mary's doing
it. Partition.
She has a
I have to clean up grub sometimes, because sometimes...
But you wouldn't have to clean up grub.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have to spend freaking an hour and a half reinstalling the image.
Yeah.
It doesn't take an hour and a half.
It
depends on how much data you have on it.
Drive, too.
Yeah, it depends how much data.
Tony, we appreciate...
The Mint, it takes me 15 minutes with that Mint install that I have on these hard drive, these laptops.
Well, I think it's just good for just backing
but you have
up.
You did the compression thing where you take all the free space out. You don't image the free space, right?
Right, and that's just the default that Clonezilla does. Because it comes out to like a 2 gig file.
Have you ever
file.
Used mClone?
I have not.
It's on TRK. It's part of TRK, and what it is it's for like cloning a whole lab. It's fantastic. It's incredible.
Oh, so it's like, what is it, like a server, and then you run a bunch of...
It's the same thing, and on the machine that you're going to run the image from, you run mclone in M with minus M,
mm-hmm.
and then it runs as a server, and it also has a Pixie boot server. And then everything else, when it boots, you tell it to Pixie boot, and it finds your server. You have to do it on an isolated network. You don't want to do it on your production network. And then they all find yours and boot from it, and then you run mclone there with a minus S option, and it just, bam, you clone the whole lab in one shot.
That's cool.
It's a really nifty tool. mClone.
That's nice.
TRK. Those guys do a great job. Don't know if I said that yet.
All right. Going on. There's another partition distro, Parted Magic, 2012-05-30. And Parted Magic is a live CD for primarily disk management. Right. Disk management and rescue tools.
Yeah.
Give Tony the shot.
I'm sorry, Tony. Tony, I'm sorry.
It's all right. Anyway, continuing on the 1st, the June 1st, we have Vector Linux 7.0, the Soho edition.
Yes, Vector. Another bunch of guys that do a great job. I used to run this years ago on some old hardware. It was fantastic. If you've got older hardware, Vector is the bomb.
Yeah, Slackware based is good.
I'll have to check into that. Of course, I put that on my list. I think I have Arch on my list. And then I have NixOS.
But Vector's really easy, Vector. Mary. And like Arch or Gentoo.
And Vector is a KDE distro, too.
Yeah. Love that minty KDE. Oh, wait a minute. Just love that KDE. All right.
And here's a distro that Matt had recent experience with on the first Solus OS 1.1. That's Solus OS 1.1 was released on the first Debian based with GNOME 2. Is that what you said your problem was with it?
Yeah, it is. It's running GNOME 2. I mean, why would you run GNOME 2? If you want a GNOME 2 type experience, run, I guess it's Mate.
Run Solus.
I've been hearing a lot of, I was calling it Mate, But I've been hearing a lot of podcasts lately about talking about it, and they're all calling it mate. So I guess it's mate. So you would, why would you run, you know, GNOME 2, which is not supported, nobody's doing anything with it, or why not run mate or cinnamon? I mean, come on. I think Ikey's going down a dead end path with this GNOME. Although he says, I did hear an interview with him. If you listen to the DistroWatch podcast, this week's DistroWatch podcast, which came out yesterday on Saturday, has an interview with Ikey at the end of it. And he talks about how they're putting a bunch of patches for GNOME 3 to make it work like GNOME 2. And they asked him if he's going to submit the patches to the GNOME 3 people. And he says, they're not going to take them. Why would I submit them? They've intentionally crippled the panel, which I'm using these patches to bring the panel back. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I doubt. Well, I mean, they might as perhaps an option. I would see that as perhaps a possibility.
Well, the option was MGSE. Or not MGSE,
but they're
GNOME Shell Extensions.
GNOME Shell Extensions.
Oh, okay.
And MGSE refers to the Mint GNOME Shell Extensions, which is what Mint tried to do at first, and they realized that was a total dead end because the shell extensions just aren't extensible enough to do what you need to do.
Wow.
Yeah, anyway.
It's a tough deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these desktops are changing.
It's progress, man. You're going to be left behind.
It's fun. It's fun listening to you.
It's going
to
be LXDE for everyone, gosh darn.
Actually, didn't they have a .4 release or a 4.0 release or something a little bit ago?
But still, have you used LXDE? They are
not
beautiful.
Since the new version.
They're beautiful.
What, are you running LXDE right now?
No, I'm not. I'm running Cinnamon because Cinnamon is also beautiful. But if you're running older hardware and you don't want that 3D experience, LXDE, I'm telling you, better than XFCE. Lighter weight than XFCE because XFCE brings in like half a
well,
gnome.
Well, if you're running older hardware and you want the 3D experience, what do you do?
You don't get it. You want an older hardware, Mary.
Yeah, I know. Just
you know what kills me though is the older hardware used to work fine, on with 3D acceleration.
Like GNOME 2 and KD3.5.
With 3D acceleration and Compass, and then all of a sudden, they say that hardware's too old and they stop support for it, and it kills me. I mean, it worked before. Why remove the support?
Because things move on. That's why.
All right.
We're going to move on.
Okay. All right. Going on to the top five, according to DistroWatch, hits per day. We got number five, Bridge Linux, with 1310.
And it's trending up.
And, you know, I hadn't heard of Bridge before this week.
I didn't either, but they had a release, so that's why they're in the top five.
And way down at number four, Ubuntu.
Yeah, and they're trending down.
Yeah, they're at 1710.
Stop, Tony. I'd like you to stop for a moment, please, because we're going to take a little trip back in the time machine for just a moment. We're going to go back 1 week.
And Magia coming in at number two with 3194 and trending up. But again, they also will not be there next week.
No, but I think they'll still be in the top 10 next week.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'll bet you breakfast.
Tony, what's that number three this week?
Number three is Magia.
Yeah.
They're still trending up from last week with 2149.
Yeah, 2149 and trending up, and I owe Mary breakfast.
And I have my list, a lengthy list of breakfast items already selected. I got to tell you, though. I check that every day. I thought, all right, it's still the top five. All those little trained monkeys, I didn't have to pay after all. I knew I was going to win that bet.
No, you did not. That's why you checked every day.
No, I was pretty sure I would. But after Tuesday when it was still up there, I thought, you know what, that's not going anywhere.
All right.
I tell you, I did the same thing, and I was going, son of a bitch.
Were you? Yeah. And I didn't want to say anything.
Yesterday
I put this thing together, and I thought, I'm gonna give you a hard time. All right, keep
That's
going.
Funny. All right, number two is Fedora with 3449.
And trending up.
And number one is Mint. 3754
and trending down, which is odd because they just had that 13 release not too long ago, but I think it's trending down because they're screwing up with the Debian edition and not giving me my updates.
That could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
Although I want to remind everybody, we talked about this at the beginning, but of our show, or you know, when we started recording shows, that this isn't necessarily popularity contest or setting or what's
and it's not even based off of the actual distributions page hits. It's based off of the page hits on the DistroWatch page for the distribution.
Right. So you have to go to DistroWatch first and then click on that distributions page.
Which I did every day from it, yeah.
So that's 7 higher than what it would have been. All right.
All right. Well.
Now it's time for Mary's distro review.
And I have my distro review this week.
Yeah, what is it this week?
Well, you know, last week, Tony, while we were waiting for you, I attempted to do the distro releases, and the first one on the list was Seduction, and I forgot to say the version name, and oh my God, I screwed it up big
number.
Time. Or yeah, the version number. So I screwed it up big time, so I thought, you know, I'm going to go ahead and take a look at this one, because it's not as well known as other ones. So anyway, I call this review Button Button, Who's Got the Button?
Oh, no. That does not bode well.
Seduction. Come on, admit it. The name of this distro is a cute play on words, but since cute is not in the vocabulary of most guys I know, clever will have to suffice. So I decided to take a look at this cleverly named distro after I messed up my mention of it during the distro releases segment in episode 33. One of the available versions on Seduction's site includes the Razer QT desktop. It's a development release, and since I had not really had a chance to check Razer QT out, I decided now was as good a time as any. So I booted, or I downloaded and burnt that QT desktop to the DVD and booted it. After running through the standard boot up scrolling text, I was presented with a grub screen complete with an oversized razor blade. A real attention getter. I selected Start Seduction 686 and was soon staring at a desktop that was simple and clutter-free. Just a modern analog clock and a few icons, including the requisite installer icon. And that razor blade, although smaller and set off to the side. Well, time to explore. The first thing I do when testing a new desktop is to change the mouse buttons because I'm a lefty. So, preferences, Razer QT settings, Razer mouse configurator seem like the place to find the mouse button settings. Wrong. The Razer mouse configurator only allowed me to change the cursor color. They should have named it Razer cursor color configurator. Of course, I pulled out my own curse configurator and muttered a few. Oddly enough, also under the Razer QT settings was the power off button. Apparently the developers wanted to make it convenient to shut off your computer in disgust after discovering you can't change your mouse button. Very thoughtful. But wait, I saw the Razer Configuration Center. Could the mouse button option be there? No. And it was not found in the fully stocked Debian application menu either. So I went to the Razer QT site, and I actually did, and to see if others had noticed it. A SUSE user had. The initial response from the forum admin was to use Yast. Another suggested making changes to xorg.com. This desktop needs a little polish, so I closed the book on Razer QT. Right. So in addition to the not ready for primetime Razer QT, you can download Seduction with XFCE, LXDE, or KDE. My plan was I actually wanted to check the GNOME version, but there was none to be had, so I decided to download KDE, or the KDE version. Now, the live version does not automatically install proprietary software such as NVIDIA drivers or my binary wireless for Intel, my Intel wireless. So if your system does use that wireless chipset, you're out of luck. You'll have to deal with it. But however, if you do have the option to install these kernel modules during the install process. And speaking of the install process, Seduction fires up the well-known browser Quapzilla on localhost.
What is it?
Quapzilla.
Quapzilla.
Quapzilla. Quapzilla. So it's obviously based on Mozilla. But
Quapzilla.
It's Quapzilla. I think, you know, again, I think they take out anything that's
Oh, what they did was they took Firefox and
I think so.
Stripped all the proprietary branding out of it.
Yep.
Like Debian does with Ice Weasel.
Yep, I think that's what happened. So that's why I said that's why the well-known browser, Quapzilla, on localhost port 8086, to walk you through the process, I like that port number, and those of you who've been around for a while will recognize 8086.
That is good.
Yeah. Now, on the partition page of the installer, QParted opened easily, unlike the live version on Razer QT, where it didn't open at all, because I did try to install it in Razer QT, and I just couldn't make it happen. I selected my partition and file system format and moved forward. Note to self, do not select ButterFS unless the distro appears ready to support it. That file system error during booting was a drag to see, because I did select that just to see what would happen. So it doesn't seem like it's ready.
ButterFS isn't, they haven't reached a full release yet, have they? They're still experimental, aren't they?
Yeah, right. And that's why the note to self, unless it seems ready to support it. And I didn't think it was, but again, I just thought, I'm going to give it a try and see what happens, see how far I get. Not very. At the end of the install, there's an install log that appears along with the reboot button. I kind of like that install log because it shows you the major steps and what occurred, transpired, that type of thing.
Can you write that out to the disk, too, so you have it available after?
That's a good question. I don't know. I was thinking, you could maybe copy and paste, but you'd have to...
There's no option to, write it out to a file?
No. None that was visible to me. But now you got me thinking... All right, but anyway, so I hit reboot. Now, Seduction 2012.1 release is called Desperado, and true to form, as each phase of the boot concludes, a bullet hole appears on the boot up splash screen. Of course, being from Detroit, I can identify.
Well versed in bullet holes.
But not that close. After the fifth bullet hole, the system transitions to a KDE 483 desktop. Now, here's what I noticed, and again, this is kind of a quick list here of what happens, or what I noticed about the install and the programs. There are two image scanning programs installed, but no Office Suite. Conquer Browser is
installed.
No, that I could see. Nope. And neither was LibreOffice or OpenOffice. Conquer Browser is installed, but not Reconc or Firefox. Now, I like Conquer Browser, and I was kind of sad when they moved away from it. Crusader, both root and non-root, is already installed, as well as Midnight Commander and Dolphin, so there's no shortage of file managers in Seduction. The wireless kernel module did not install, despite my preference and selection that it be installed, because when you are going through the install process at the very end or near the end, you have the option of selecting, in my case, it was Realtek, and it was the Intel Wireless kernel module to install. So I selected both of them, but it was not to be found. I mean, I went and I did LSMod, I did ModProbe, Etsy modules, I put that module there, hoping right. that I could get it to
did
load.
Did you try an InsMod?
Oh, maybe that was my problem.
To insert the module into the running kernel?
Yeah, that could be what I did. Yeah, that's probably it. I was running out of time. All right, we'll keep on going. But anyway, and that may be what my problem is, or was. So, in all application systems, they have a kernel remover, a utility which removes old kernels. Yakquake is already installed. And then, of course, Nuvo, the open source NVIDIA module, is installed. And KDisk Free, which shows usage by partition, is installed in the systems menu. I like that. And then, of course, there's the full Debian menu available. There's also CENI, which is an NCURSIS network interface configuration, and it appears to be the primary networking tool, which is a little surprising, but it does have a lot of options. I mean, I thought they'd have something a little more GUI-looking because, you're running 483, then you kind of drop back down into this NCURSIS-like network configuration tool.
You're not using Network Manager?
I tried to... No, not that I could find. Not that I could find. Then I tried to install, there's a menu option to install directly to USB. And then the music player is called Dead Beef, probably killed by one of those bullets during the boot process. I'm sure Fedora's latest release, Beefy Miracle, doesn't have this music player, but perhaps its next release, Spherical, could. Who knows? So, Seduction. Some may be seduced by this Linux distro, but for me, not so much. Seduction has not replaced Chakra as my favorite, but not default distro. So that's my take on Seduction. Again, it's got some nice stuff in there, but it just didn't really get me going.
All right.
So. All right.
But that ints mod, that may be my problem.
Yeah, INS mod, insert module.
Hmm, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome, Mary.
All right, moving along.
Yes, what's going on in the convention scene this month, Mary?
Oh, yeah, the convention scene. Well, we've actually we've got a few this month. June 6th through the 8th, we've got LinuxCon Japan at the Pacifico Yokohama in Yokohama, Japan. LinuxCon Japan is a premier Linux conference in Asia that brings together a unique blend of core developers, administrators, users, community managers, and industry experts. June 8th through the 10th, we've got Southeast Linux Fest at the Blake Hotel in Charlotte, North Carolina. Southeast Linux Fest is a community event for anyone who wants to learn more about Linux in free and open source software. It's part educational conference and part social gathering. Yeah, gotta love it. The next one on the list, June 19th through the 21st, is Solutions Linux Open Source. It's at the CNIT in Paris, France. Solutions Linux Open Source is the finest event pertaining to the software industry. I took that right from the site. The finest event. Everything in France is the finest.
Well, the French are just so full of themselves. This is crazy.
So anyway, but it's but that's going on 19th through 21 June. And finally, we've got June 26th through 29th, we've got the Open Source Bridge 2012 at the Elliott Center in Portland, Oregon. Open Source Bridge is a conference for developers working with open source technologies and for people interested in learning the open source way. So the links to all those conventions will be in the show notes. And that's the June convention scene.
All right.
All right.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
All right. In the news this week, finally, a judge who gets it. Oracle loses to Google. Oracle's attack on Google goes down in flames. Federal Judge William Alsup put the final nail in Oracle's coffin with a ruling this week that says you can't copyright an API. Judge Alsup equated it to copywriting a set of how-to instructions. This is in part what he said in his ruling. So long as the specific code used to implement a method is different, anyone is free under the Copyright Act to write his or her own code to carry out exactly the same function or specification of any methods used in the Java API. Less than a month ago, a European court made a similar ruling. In that case, the court found that programming APIs couldn't be copyrighted, as that would have, in effect, monopolized ideas. Oracle is going to appeal, as they spent tens of millions on this suit already, and Larry Ellison is like a dog with a bone. If he is not careful, though, he'll be like that dog from Aesop's fable that winds up losing all the bones because he is greedy. Right now, Oracle's compensation will be limited to statutory damages for the 9 lines of code that were found to be infringing. That means that their maximum damages would be around $150,000 and maybe much less. If Oracle wants to win on appeal, they will not only have to get Judge Alsup's ruling overturned, but also win a completely new trial. That may prove difficult, as in an interview after the trial, the foreman said that Oracle was never even close to proving their case. He also said that the only reason that the jury found Google guilty of any infringement was because the judge's instructions made it seem like they had to. In his ruling, Judge Alsup had this to say about the one copied function called range check. This was an innocent and inconsequential instance of copying in the context of a massive number of lines of code. So it doesn't even sound like he's going to award them even close to $150,000.
Yeah.
So, Larry, I would not pin any hopes on getting
Starbucks cards.
Yeah, Starbucks cards. Yeah.
$25.
Right. So, Larry, I would not pin any hopes on getting even close to the $150,000 possible on this one. It couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Also, on a side note, my favorite title of any article on this topic that I saw this week came from internetnews.com. Their title was, "Oracle Loses, All Your APIs Are Belong to Us." So, yep. Oh, I can't believe it. We finally got a judge that gets it.
Yeah.
Did you say he was a programmer?
Yes, he has programmed in the past.
That's why he gets it.
You know, it's... Moving on, Microsoft finds first extortion victim for UEFI. Fedora has become the first distribution to cave into Microsoft. Fedora 18 will include a digital key that will allow it to boot up on UEFI-enabled hardware. Granted, the keys are not very expensive, being $99 per key, but this is an ongoing expense, as every time you have a new release, you need a new key. If your distribution has a release every 6 months, then you will need a new key every 6 months. What about rolling releases like OpenSUSE Tumbleweed or Linux Mint Debian Edition? Will these distributions only need one key ever, or will they tie it to, say, the kernel version? The Fedora project faced a couple of solutions to this problem, just like every other distribution out there. They chose to accept the extortion demands. Their other options were to produce their own key or ignore the digital key entirely. These present their own problems. Producing your own key means getting every hardware vendor to accept your key or face the fact that there will be large amounts of hardware that your key does not work with.
See, and I don't know if you just mentioned this because I wasn't paying attention, getting ready for this other thing. That Linux standard base, do you remember a few years ago there was that kind of push to have kind of a commonality and kind of a common base system?
Right.
It just seems to me that in light of this, that whole Linux standard base, that should be pushed out as sort of the baseline, and then I it would seem to me that all the major hardware vendors would get on board with that because it is common and they're not going to have to address 50 different distros. Although
I don't know how that would work because
I don't know every the distro details. I'm not a details person.
Yeah, every distro couldn't use it. It just wouldn't work that way.
Oh, all right.
But where does this key go? I mean, is it the bootloader that needs a key or is it the kernel?
The bootloader, and I describe that a little bit later.
Okay, continue on.
Yeah. If my description doesn't answer your questions, then we can talk about it.
Okay.
These present their own problems. Producing your own key. Oh, I already said that. Large amounts of hardware not work with. Yep. And in its current state, ignoring the key means having to fiddle with the computer's firmware to get it to boot. This is unacceptable, as it creates a large barrier to non-techies. It's like Matthew Garrett says. The cause of free software isn't furthered by making it difficult or impossible for unskilled users to run Linux. Having the key allows the machine to ensure that the binary version of the distribution is the same as the one sent to the key signer. The Fedora engineers are going to develop a separate bootloader to provide the key to UEFI system and then hand control back over to the regular bootloader. There are problems with even this method, as some of the kernel functionality will need to be locked down. Then kernel modules would also need to be signed. What if you're compiling your own kernel? How are you going to get it signed? Those are the facts as they currently exist. Stay tuned for the Matt's Opinion segment, where I will be expounding upon my thoughts on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And back to that UEFI system. What the Fedora engineers are going to do is they're going to develop, like, they're calling it a shim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to present the binary image along with the key to the hardware, which is then going to compare it to what was submitted to Microsoft when they got the key. Okay, and then they're going to say, okay, it matches the binary image and the key, match this key and this binary image. Boom, good, mm-hmm. done. And then after that process, then they're going to hand it back over to, say, Grub to continue the boot process. Does that help? Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Well, then we don't have to have a unified Linux. We need a unified shim that all Linux can use.
Well, no, because it's going to have to be – everybody's not going to be able to use Fedora's binary image.
And so a laptop like this one –
because that's another thing Fedora looked into. The Fedora project also looked into getting a key for every Linux distribution,
mm-hmm.
But that would cost millions of dollars. So they didn't do that.
Indiegogo project.
So, yeah.
That's the public fundraising site.
Also some of the kernel functionality is going to need to be locked down to that original binary.
Yeah.
Or you'll have problems after it boots.
Excellent.
Well, what about desktops?
It's not good. Anyway, we're kind of getting into my rant later.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Yeah, I'll save my question about my laptop till then.
Okay.
All right.
So, next up, we love Linux, says Microsoft Azure team.
Fingers crossed behind their back.
Yeah. Does anybody else remember Steve Ballmer referring to Linux as a cancer? I do.
Yes.
Well, not anymore, as the Azure team makes the necessary changes in order to embrace Linux. They're doing this in order to try and gain some market share away from the likes of Amazon and Rackspace. Currently, you cannot run a persistent instance of Linux on Azure, which means that when it goes down, yes, I said when, not if, you lose all of your data, okay? Not only if it goes down unexpectedly, but even during a planned reboot,
Jeez.
your data is gone, okay? This is a completely unacceptable situation for any business. Well, in the next release of Azure, you'll be able to run persistent instances of Linux. I personally don't understand why anyone would want to run an instance of Linux on top of Azure. That'd be like trying to run a Ferrari with a VW engine. So, it's just nuts. And last but not least, overall server revenue down 2.4% worldwide, Linux server revenue up 16%. The International Data Corporation, IDC, have put out their 2012 Q1 report. Last year, Linux server revenue was about $2.07 billion in the first quarter, and this year it was $2.4 billion. In the same time frame, Windows server revenue grew by 1.3% from $5.8 billion to $5.9 billion. This leaves Windows with 50.2% of the market and Linux with 20.7%. Now, let's look at what that growth means. Unlike back in episode 21 on March 4th, when I figured out that at the current rate of growth, Linux would overtake Windows on the desktop in 59 years, this time it's much closer. At the current standing, with Linux server revenue at $2.4 billion and Windows server revenue at $5.9 billion, the current rate of growth for each respectively is 16% and 1.3%. With these figures, we can estimate that Linux server revenue will overtake Windows server revenue in 7 years. Now, 7 is a lot closer than 59. If current trends stay the way they are or reasonably close to what they are, we can realistically see Linux revenue overtake Windows revenue in the server market in the next 10 years.
Yeah. Rock on. Yeah, rock on.
Yes.
Well, I think after I'd seen that you were going to read that story or that news item that you had prepared,
right.
I saw this and I thought, oh, I'll send this off to you because it does show. But you take a look at the growth and how Unix really was predominant and then now Linux is predominant. And at the very top, Windows Server kind of widened a little bit, but you see it's just not carrying forward. But again, it will make more sense.
But when you look at revenue, they own 50% of the market.
Of course they do.
In
it's
revenue.
Because yeah, but it's
because you can't run it without paying for it.
Yeah.
No, true.
Yeah,
true.
That's the only reason why you're captive. All right. Enough of that.
Continuing on. I have one news article that I found last night. Facebook unveils Folly.
They unveil Folly?
Yeah. Folly. Folly is their treasure trove of open source C++ gold.
Oh, I thought it was some mistake that the folly of their IPO.
Yeah, well, it's a collection of usable C++ libraries, and it was developed in-house at Facebook to meet their needs of Facebook engineers. That's from the VentureBeat website. But then they go on to say other open source projects that they've released, like Cassandra, Hip Hop, and Thrift. So, interesting stuff.
Great.
Cool.
Let's see. I've got a couple of things. I was looking at this blog, and again, the link to it will be in the show notes, and it's a developer's blog, and the announcement was that Ubuntu, apparently there's a right-click menu item available for Dolphin that will enable you to sync with Ubuntu One. So if you've got an Ubuntu One account and you're using it, you'll be able to almost do an instant sync with a particular file by simply right-clicking on it. That was something I saw. Now, I got that installed, and I'm going to have to work out some detail as far as some Ruby library or something on my system, but that I think that may be just specific to me. The other thing I wanted to mention this morning is that there was another. I kind of got off on a right-click menu frenzy this week, and this is for KDE folks. There is, and again, the link to this will be in the show notes. But there is a really slick right-click menu available that gives you a multitude. I mean, all you have to do is just place it into the correct folder in your .dot file in your home directory, and it gives you the ability to set up some Samba configurations. It gives you the ability to, and I'm kind of reading this from, since I didn't have it open, I'm so sorry. It gives you a bunch of capabilities, again, all at the right click, although for me it's a left click since I'm left-handed, but But yeah, I wanted to just quickly mention that. So the link to that will be in the show notes. I installed that, and again, it was nice. SSH, you can instantly get something set up with that. You can send a file to email. You can do a whole bunch of different things. And it's an RPM that you download from the KDE app site. So you need to use Alien to convert and or to install it. So I just wanted to say that.
All right, cool. Yeah, Alien's though, to be able to use RPMs and your and Debian mm-hmm. systems.
Yeah, I haven't used it for a long time because the Ubuntu repository is so rich.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. The only time I've ever used Alien was when I was trying to install a custom piece of software mm-hmm. that was only available with an RPM.
Yeah.
If it's right. a common piece of open source software, it's always in the yeah. repositories.
Cool. You know, I found an app for my tablet for LPI. It gives you 10 random questions that are like what you would see on the LPI quiz or thing.
Those LPI questions, though, Tony?
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw something this week, too, about it, where I actually took a LPI test practice thing on the internet. I only got, like, 30%. But
yeah.
All right. Yeah, you know, a couple things that I saw this week. Office on iPads, Android tablets offers good and bad news for Microsoft.
I have a question. If they're going to have Office so that it'll run on Android, mm-hmm. will it also? How hard is it then to make it run natively on Linux if it's going to run on Android?
Probably not that hard for some.
I'm sure it's a mobile version of Office, isn't it? Or is it a full version of Office?
Oh, it could be, yeah.
Yeah, because mobile, they strip out a whole bunch of stuff.
But still, it'd still be Office.
It
would make it compatible. With mobile Office, you can still open, read, and edit files that were created on a desktop Office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you know, because Microsoft, they have to, you take a look at how the mobile market is just exploding, and they're not a yeah. big player in there at all. So in order for them to make some
And Office is where they're really making their money now.
Yeah,
as
I mean, corporations,
to,
yeah. they just, that's some of the de facto standard. I know my company uses it.
Everybody uses
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, putting it out there on the iPad, putting it out there on Android will see, and that just goes to show you Microsoft, the Microsoft way was not a good way, where they're trying to not, you know, lock out everything else. I mean, Apple can get away with it because they have cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, and not only that, but it's just the paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read something by Eric Raymond about it not too long ago, where he says, you know, back in the day it was these guys, you know, it was IBM, Novell, and then now it's been Microsoft, and now it's time for somebody else. It's just the way the industry works. It's time for a paradigm shift. So.
Yep, it is. It is. So, and that's good to see. Other thing I thought was kind of interesting is in the Microsoft's new EULA that they're going to be rolling out for, I think, Windows 8, is that it prevents class action suits.
I don't think that's legal. I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I don't think you can prevent a class action lawsuit with a EULA. I just don't think you. I don't think that's legal. I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, you, like you can't sue us because you said you wouldn't.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I don't think that's viable.
Well, yeah, and it'll be interesting to see the first test of it to see how, you know, whether it will be upheld, but because otherwise, what are the other options? Small suits, claims court, arbitration. Yeah,
give me a break.
And you know, I mean, if your product's that good, then you wouldn't have to worry about it. So, yeah, but those
You're
two things...
You're getting me started early on my rant, man.
Okay, sorry. No, but those two things kind of caught my eye. The other thing I noted, too, is open source initiatives in Spain. The regional government, of course, Spain, you know, I think between Spain and Greece, well, there's several European countries that have got some tremendous debt problems. So the regional government of Spain's Basque Country has decreed that all software produced for Basque government agencies and public bodies will be open source. This was in... I think honline.com news this past week. I saw that and I thought, you know, it makes perfect sense because I think the total cost of ownership, despite what Microsoft had said in previous papers, is going to be lower.
Has to be. Linux.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one way for Spain to get out of their little debt problem. Well, not to get out of it, but perhaps to lessen it slightly.
Yeah. You know,
don't get me started on the European problems. And everybody's looking to Germany to save the European Union. It's just crap. So.
Well, there. I mean, yeah, not to get off target, but the euro. Greece, maybe just dropping out of the eurozone.
Yeah, I don't know. If I were Germany, I'd kick them to the curb and say good riddance. But I guess Germany is part of the league that doesn't want Greece to wind up getting out of the European Union and stop using the euro. So I don't know.
Okay. So anyway.
It's not open source or Linux related. So moving on.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
Oops. That's a little over anxious mouse action there. That's right. It's Is It Alive? During this segment of the show, Mary challenges Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. This week's segment takes a slightly different tack. When Mary challenges Tony and Matt to decide whether the name entity is a Linux distribution or a bar drink.
What if it's both, right. Mary? What if it's both?
Well, then you get double credit and a double shot.
Okay.
All right, that is a bar. That is a bar drink. All right, the first one on our list today, gentlemen, hands off the keyboards, please. All right, first one is Sabra.
It's a Linux distro.
I'm gonna go with a Linux distro too.
Sabra is a chocolate orange flavored liqueur produced in Israel.
This does not bode well.
Wait a minute.
So it's a drink. All right, well, we're off to a good start. Liquid lemur.
I'm going to go with the Linux distribution.
I'm going with the drink.
It is a Linux distribution.
Oh.
Liquid Lemur provides usable but minimal as possible set of pre-installed applications and packages. It's based on Debian testing Wheezy Branch. However, due to complications with packages that often broke, they moved to an Arch-based distro. All right, so you guys keep track of what you got here. Let's see. So you guys are both wrong the first one.
That's right.
Second one. That's right. And then Matt got it right, and Tony unfortunately did not. We're on to the next one. Black Panther.
That is a drink.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the drink also. Doesn't that sound like a Linux distro?
The Black Panther OS development started in 2002. The latest stable version, 10.1, became available January 2010. At the time, it was among the top five popular Linux distributions in January at distrowatch.com. So, did you both get it wrong?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's also a drink. I'm going to look that up after the...
All right, it might be. Then you'll get credit for it. All right. Tiger Paw.
Drink.
Oh. I'll go to Linux distro.
It's a drink.
Oh, Matt.
Matt's twirling around here in his chair. A delicious... Delicious alcoholic drink recipe for Tiger Paw with citrus vodka, lemon juice, sugar, ice, orange soda. All right, Pacifica.
I'm going to go with Linux distribution.
I'm going to bomb out this week, I'm sure, but I'm going to go with the drink.
It's a drink.
Oh!
It's 1.5 ounces of bourbon, 1 teaspoon of vermouth red, and 1.5 ounces of pineapple juice. Mixing instructions, stir in a shaker with glass and with ice and pour into a glass or strain into a glass. All right, Viper.
Is it Viper or Viper?
Viper.
Two P's or one?
It's two R's. Maybe it's Zipper and Viper. A Viper Zipper. It's called Viper.
V-I-P-E-R-R?
V-I-P-E-R-R. Is it a drink or a Linux distribution?
I'm going to go with Linux distribution.
I'll go with Linux also.
You're right. It's a Fedora remix that aims to merge Crunch Bang qualities with the Fedora-based benefits. And that's it this week. So, let's see. What do we got here? Who won? Tony, you were keeping track, weren't you? Yeah, what was it? What
Matt
did you get?
Got
was
it 3-2.
3-2. All right. Join us next week when Mary challenges Matt and Tony to another edition of Is It Alive?
All right.
It's listener feedback time.
I think it's nice that we have consistent listener feedback because the first few episodes, I remember nothing.
It shows us that people are listening. Thank you,
yes.
Everybody. Thank you. So, So who's our first one, Tony?
Well, the first one was Kevin O'Brien. He sent us a message or on the website. He commented and he says how the licensing and
he doesn't like the way he doesn't like my rant from last week about how he says I was unfair to the GPL V3. Well, I'm sorry. That's my feelings, Kevin. And I know I didn't address it point by point, but I didn't want to do that on the show because it would take too long. But if you do look at it, and there's several websites out there that do it, and Groklaw has the best one as far as I'm concerned, where it shows the two licenses right next to each other, and GPL3 is not GPL V2. It's not even close, and it sucks.
All right.
Tell us how you really feel.
And then...
Have a good day, Kevin.
Yeah. Pagel also emailed us, said he really likes the Is It Alive section, so thank you to Mary. And he got a better score than I did.
He beat Tony last week.
3 out of 5? Or is there 6?
Yeah. I think Mary does 6. You do 6, right?
5.
Well, this week
I tried to do 5. I think it was 5. I had to take one. Was there 6 this week?
Yeah.
Anyway. See, I think we should take away the one where we both got it right.
Oh, yeah, well, it won't make any difference. I thought you said it was 3 to 2.
Yeah, because then I would have... Then
3 to 2. That's fine.
Because then I would have 2 to 1. I don't know.
That's fine. As long as it's not a blowout, then I'm okay with that. Anyway.
No, I think we need to take the one question out where I got it wrong and Tony got it right. That's the one we need to take out. Then it'll be 3 to 1.
Right.
And then we'll be tied again with
points. We're going to be going to the playoffs soon, so I'll concoct some kind of playoff scheme. Yeah. And speaking of playoffs, didn't we have a little discussion last week about the scoring?
Oh, yeah. NHL scoring. I was confused.
And he was wrong.
I was. The NHL points doesn't refer to goals. It refers to this other wacky point system they use.
That's right. 2 for a victory, and you get 1 point for an overtime
loss.
Loss.
All right. Cool. So,
do we have more listener feedback?
We do. We have Tom in Israel. He says that Matt and I were condescending to Mary.
No, I think he said Matt was.
Yeah,
he actually said.
He said that we were condescending to you, but he had problems with my. He had problems with my rant also last week about how.
Al Gore.
Yeah, about my Al Gore reference.
Well, because Al Gore, he took the initiative, and that was just in creating the financial.
Okay, and I said this in my reply to him, yeah. And I said it last week on the air also. I understand that he misspoke. However, it is exactly what he said, regardless of how anybody else wants to spin it. He said, I created the internet.
I took the initiative.
No, his exact quote was from his interview. Let's see.
I think Mary read it on... Air.
And I also have a link to the, you could actually see the actual video if you would like.
That's Matt thinking.
Yeah, this is my thinking noise. It's hamsters running around in my head.
Talking to the voices.
Okay, he said it in an interview with Wolf Blitzer on CNN Late Edition on March 9th, 1999, which you can see at a link that I will provide to Tony to put in the show notes. Okay? And in his quote, this is a direct quote from him from that episode. During my service in the United States Congress, I took the initiative in creating the internet.
Oh, you know, the other listener feedback, you know, do you guys ever read the comment section for our episodes?
I do sometimes, not often.
Okay, because, you know, there was a Chatter had.
Oh, Chatter did. Yeah,
he commented on Hybride.
Yes.
And then I didn't realize it, but about 6 days later I responded. So I don't know if that's really listener feedback or if that's just...
Yeah, it is. We need to make a more conscious effort to check that. Yeah, we have more feedback, too, from David Ellis.
You want to read that?
He said several weeks ago we were kind of beating up on Fedora because it uses RPMs, which I think I was. He says he thinks it was me, too. And I said that, but since Yum, it's not really a problem. And he really appreciates the fact that we said that since Yum, it's not really an issue. So, but another thing, David Ellis, he runs a semi-public Minecraft server at thelostforest.org. So if any of you guys out there into Minecraft, maybe give thelostforest.org a try.
Is that? No.
All one word, thelostforest.org.
We're not recommending it, but
no, I've not, I don't play Minecraft. Never been to the site. It's a little note.
There, just check it out if you want.
And on to the soapbox.
All right. Matt's soapbox. Warning, this article may contain opinions of mine that you and Sunday Morning Linux Review don't necessarily agree with. Don't let me get away with it. Have your say with some listener feedback. Respond to show@smlr.us. UEFI, Microsoft's new extortion scheme. Unified Extensible Firmware Interface, commonly referred to as UEFI, is not a bad thing by itself. In fact, it can be a really good thing if it's implemented in a sane and reasonable manner. However, Microsoft is trying to strong-arm hardware manufacturers into implementing it in a way that hurts everyone except Microsoft. Just because they create an OS with more holes in it than Swiss cheese, they're trying to force everyone onto this BS. UEFI should be implemented because companies like Microsoft make crap and most computer users are unable to keep themselves from clicking on everything that pops up in front of them. The hardware manufacturers just need to implement an easy on-off switch for requiring signature keys, regardless of what Microsoft demands. The solution of having to buy a key from Microsoft is just total BS. This makes them the de facto king of computer land, as everyone else must submit their request to be able to just boot up to them. What if Microsoft decides that you're too much competition and does not sell you a key? What recourse do you have then? How about if Microsoft decides that you should not have given you a key to begin with? Can they just invalidate the key they sold you? Well, I'll tell you what. I will run 20-year-old hardware before I ever run a Linux distro that uses an effing key they bought from Microsoft. That's my opinion.
20-year-old hardware?
Yeah. If I have to just keep using the same hardware for 20 years, I'll do it before I run anything that uses a key they bought from Microsoft.
That would be analogous to running an 8086 processor today.
Yes. That is my stand. I'll continue to run this hardware until it crumbles to dust if
I
have to.
Or buy a nice reason, because I'm sure they won't be putting those in there, would they?
It depends. Are they going to be able to buy hardware that doesn't use? I mean, all the hardware is going to eventually use UEFI because it's replacing BIOS. Okay.
Well, yeah, but UEFI and Microsoft just asked them to turn on one option. So, like Zareason and System 76, they actually do work with the manufacturers and they can turn that off for their systems.
All right. Well, maybe I'll have to go with Zareason then instead of just going to their website regularly.
You won't regret it.
So, anyway. That's my opinion. What do you think?
I don't think you'll have anyone disagreeing with you, Matt.
I don't think
not
so.
This week.
I think this week it's pretty rock solid.
The only thing I disagreed with was that there is some Swiss cheese that's not very holy.
And by not very holy, she does not mean made by monks.
Yeah.
Featured music of the week.
Well, I guess we're coming to the end of our show this week. I've got a little bit of music. This week is Crazy Train by Dickie F. Take a listen. All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review, episode 34, the Susie and Venus.
Transit of Venus.
Yeah. The Susie anniversary coinciding with the transit of Venus.
That's
episode,
right.
Yep.
Episode, yeah. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Have a good week. See you next week.
All right.
No, we got all the way up through Solus.
Wow.
We're moving on to the top five.
You took a serious leap of absence there.
Talk about a brain cramp. Oh, my God.
Wait, say that first one again, because I swear that's a Linux distro. And maybe both.
Okay, the first one is called Sabra.
Sabra.
And the other one was Black Panther, right?
Black Panther.
Matt's Soapbox. Warning, this article may contain opinions of mine that you and Sunday Morning Linux Review don't necessarily agree with. Don't let me get away with it. Have your say with some listener feedback at respond to show@smlr.us.
Yeah, give them,
I read that same part every week, and I can't believe I messed it up.
Give them something they can't respond to.
I like that. No,
or responds for Matt.
I can actually create that for it if you want to respond.
No. I'm going to do that again. Three.
Darn
two,
it.
One.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.